For over 6 years, Hank Thorpe hosted All of the Above Radio, the most intelligent, honest, and eclectic combo of music and talk that you never heard. But the more things change, the more things stay the same. Hank is back with a new version of the old scene. No more music, no more time constraints, but he still has great stories, great interviews, and more passion than a novel with Fabio on the cover. Once upon a time, Hank Thorpe was your bastion of good music, good talk, and full escapism. Now, Hank is your bastion for punchlines, passion, and perspective. Hank Thorpe, your former, present, and future favorite podcast host, presents all new, all different, but still, All of the Above.
And at the end of this episode, I'm going to tell you that it is the best episode about recency bias I've ever done. And I'll explain why later. Welcome to All New, All Different, All of the Above. New version of the old scene. My name is Hank. Hey, how you doing? You can find me on... let's give you all those vitals. Why not? We got a second. You can find me on Instagram, either at Hank, hey, how you doing? Or at Hank Told You So. You can still find the Facebook page. It's got a lot of old content from All of the Above Radio, my previous show, but that's facebook.com/allofthe above radio. And I am continuously pleased to announce that this show is on Spotify. If you are listening from alltheaboveradio.com or you just happen to find it on iTunes, I'm also on Spotify. Just search Hank Thorpe or search All New, All Different, All of the Above. Very easy. As easy as it's ever been. So I wanted to read a couple of definitions to you before I get started, because these two definitions and these two phrases I give you are going to be the top of the paragraph that I keep referring to. I've talked about this before. I've talked about how Chris Rock is my favorite comedian. I'll go ahead and say of all time, just for his comprehensive body of work. There's comedians that kind of bubble up and like sit next to him for a little while. But my top three will forever be Chris Rock, Dave Chappelle, I know my top two. And then, like, number three is sometimes Eddie Murphy, sometimes it's Louis C.K., sometimes it's Bill Burr. It just kind of depends on my mood. But I know one and two. That's easy. Chris Rock, Dave Chappelle. That easy. But the way that Chris Rock writes his comedy, and you're never going to be able to unhear this now that I've told you this, he writes his routine with a main sentence or kind of a header to a sentence, and then he gives you a paragraph that describes it and opens it up and then goes back to the sentence, back to the top. When you think about his routines about O.J. Simpson or him getting a divorce or black people versus... It's all the same constant and cadence and concept. Beginning sentence up top, paragraph, back to the top. New paragraph, back to the top. And that's what I'll be doing today. With that being said, I wanted to read two definitions for you. So, this from Wikipedia. Recency bias is a cognitive bias that favors events over historic ones. Favors recent events over historic ones. A memory bias. Recency bias gives greater importance to the most recent event, such as the lawyers. See, this is why, ladies and gentlemen, I never went into television. You put a teleprompter in front of me, and I have to sit there real hard and focus real hard on reading every word. And when I am reading every word, I get real monotone and real like computer-ish. So I'm going to start that over out of respect to you. Recency bias is a cognitive bias that favors recent events over historic ones. A memory bias. Recency bias gives greater importance to the most recent event, such as the final lawyer's closing argument a jury hears before being dismissed to deliberate. Okay, so now you know, so now you are familiar with, if not re-familiar with, recency bias. Now let me give you the more current day hot take version of that. Prisoner of the moment is the state where an opinion is based on things that are happening right now. There is no real regard for what happened before or what may happen after. And that is from LinkedIn, and that is actually being credited to ESPN's First Take, the iteration that included Skip Bayless and Stephen A. Smith. And I picture whenever they were talking about it, they were probably doing another LeBron versus Michael Jordan argument because, well, whenever you need to fill time, just debate the greatest athlete that was versus the greatest athlete that is and just go with it. Easy way to fill space. So now that you know we are talking about prisoner of the moment and recency bias, and if you paid attention to the definitions, they're pretty close. For the sake of this conversation, I'm going to use them interchangeably. And why, you ask, am I bringing this up to you right now? Well, I'll tell you. A few weeks ago, for those of you who don't know, I am a licensed massage therapist. And to save money, my fiance and I talked back and forth. She used to be a member of a nearby spa, paying X amount of money a month, as you tend to do with a massage membership, because it just makes sense. I told her, you know what, we discussed, and I said, why don't you just start booking with me? I'm not as experienced as the person you've been going to, but I'm going to come considerably cheaper, and I can work around your schedule. And so, we're in the midst of a massage, and she brings up she was just having a quick memory moment, says, hey, remember the ceviche we had while we were in Maui? And I said, yeah, sure do. But I remember the poke we had even more so. And I tried not to say that it was the best poke that I ever had. But then I did. We'll come back to that. So later on, after the massage, at dinner, she says, oh, by the way, I have something to bring up. I said, okay. She says, well, I binge listened to the last three shows you did, search Hank Thorpe on Spotify. And by the way, thank you to my fiance for binge listening me. That was pretty cool. She said, I was listening to your show about Maui, and you said it might be the best vacation we've gone on together. And obviously I said it. But as we were talking back and forth, and like actually taking the moments to process not only what I said, but was it the best trip that we've gone on together, I realized quite blatantly that I was in the midst of being prisoner of the moment. I had a little bit of recency bias. And I know that because I would imagine it was the companion piece episode where I was harking back to the highlights of the trip to Maui that we took. And that's probably shortly after that is when I said that Maui was the best trip we've taken together. Now, when she heard me say that on the show, she probably got a little perk up because that, to my knowledge, is the favorite vacation she has taken so far. She's been twice. She has loved it both times and would gladly go back a third and probably fourth or even fifth time. So now as we're sitting at the dinner table and kind of thinking about back and forth whether or not it was the best trip, from my opinion, I kind of came to the opinion that it's the best, the trip to Maui we took together has the best highlights. You watch a baseball game or you watch a basketball game, and a basketball game is 48 minutes. But obviously the Sports Center view of it, or the YouTube view of it, to be a little more current, is the highlights. They compress a 48-minute game down to, we'll call it, 2.5 minutes of highlights. The best dunk, the best pass, the opposing team cursing out the ref and getting a technical foul. So when you look at the highlights of the trip to Maui, and that's what I was talking about with you in that companion episode, I ended up in being prisoner of the moment and saying that that was the best trip. When we sat back and really talked about it, and this is an awesome, awesome problem to have, is that I can't figure out which trip was the best until I really thought about it. That means we've been on a lot of great trips together in the short time we've been together, and that's awesome. For the record, it's a dead heat between the trip we took to Tahoe in July of 2020 or the trip we took to Pennsylvania in 2020. Which actually kind of runs hand in hand with the conversation I had with you in both episodes where I talked about Maui. Because I talked about the idea of when I go on a trip, I listen to the city and basically open my eyes and my mind to say, is this a city I could live in? Is this a city I could move to? And funny enough, two cities so far that I have been to with my fiance and said I could live here are Tahoe and Philadelphia. So I guess it's kind of accidentally no coincidence that I say that it's a dead heat between those two for my favorite trip that we've been on together. Maui was phenomenal. There is, up to this point in my life, nothing more beautiful than your toes in the black sand beach. And I'm trying my best to not have recency bias when I say that. I'm pretty sure that the most beautiful thing I have ever seen is the black sand beach on the road to Hana. And one of the most fun things I have done, or one of the greatest highlights of a trip, especially a trip we've taken together, was the last day we spent after we dropped off the family. I've talked about this. Went to the food truck park, escaped danger by driving up and down a freaking it's not an active volcano. I don't remember if Haleakala is an active volcano. I'll have to look that up later. And then spending several hours at Esther's Fair Prospect. It all made for the best day of the trip and a spectacular highlight of any trip we've ever been on. So, recency bias and being prisoner of the moment took over, and I said Maui was the best trip we've been on, from my opinion, that we've been on, but it gave the best highlights. The best trip is either Pennsylvania or Lake Tahoe. It's one of the two. Maybe I'll just have to go back to both with her and we'll figure it out. So now that you know why I'm here chatting with you, because, well, I got caught being prisoner of the moment, let's just dive into this just a little deeper. I'm going to give you plenty of examples in just a little bit as to where prisoner of the moment or recency bias has affected me. And I obviously invite you to do the same. THEHRT3@gmail.com or alloftheaboveradio@gmail.com or my Instagram, either @HankToldYouSo or @Hank, hey, how you doing? You will have the chance to chime in with how recency bias or being prisoner of the moment has affected you or what you've said as a result of it. Until then, the examples are coming shortly, but I want you to think about how recency bias actually kind of plays into your everyday life. When you're in the midst of a conversation with somebody, there's a reasonable chance you might use it as a slight persuasion technique. If you're having a conversation with somebody and you're giving them options, do you tend to bury the option you like the least in within the first or second of four options, and then the option you want the most, do you put that one as last? It's very possible. And I know once upon a time when I worked at Uncle Julio's, as a trainer, you were taught to give a menu presentation in the following way. You were taught to show the appetizers, point to the safe food, the enchiladas and tacos, but speak in full detail in descriptive words about the grill items. You spent time talking about the fajitas, saying that it was the specialty, saying how delicious they were, grilled to perfection, sizzling platter, butter and tortillas, and describing the shrimp and the bacon and the melting cheese coming off of the shrimp. You were supposed to mention those last to keep them on the mind of the guest. Now, there are some mental techniques that will have you put the first option or the option you want to persuade with as the first option. So that does work sometimes. More notably, the most recent, as we are discussing, the last option you give tends to be the one that sticks in people's mind the most. That's why we're here. That's why we're chatting about it. So think about that. Whenever somebody has tried to talk to you at a restaurant, what's their presentation sound like? Hi, my name is blah blah. I'll be taking care of you today. We are known for this, this, and this, and today's special is this. Can I interest you in some iced tea or perhaps one of our specialty fresh margaritas today? End of sentence. Fresh margarita is the last thing on your mind. If you weren't thinking of drinking, oh, well, a margarita sounds kind of good. I'm on vacation. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean you will always give in to the recency bias. It doesn't always mean you will drink if you didn't want to, but it's a tool to kind of push you in the right direction, just to give you that nudge. And as with the example of me talking about Maui and the amazing things I did, one of which includes the goat farm, I talked myself into recency bias. Now, if I was to talk in list form and say, okay, can you remember the two best things you did on every trip you have been on with your fiance? Well, first of all, that would take a minute. But second of all, that might be a better representation of how to figure out what trip you like the most. It's a little tougher, requires a little more time. But could be a lot of fun to reminisce on all of those times. Really, though. So as I'm chatting with you here, I want to go ahead and start flinging some examples at you. So here's how recency bias may affect you. Here's a couple examples. Your favorite sitcom or TV show. I know this one gets to me because I'll pop on Netflix or Hulu sometimes while I'm cooking and I don't want to listen to the radio. And I'll just put on a random TV show that I used to be into. And I'll get done watching three or four episodes and I will say,
pretty much without fail, I'll say, man, I'm pretty sure Modern Family is my favorite sitcom. But then I'll watch 4 or 5 episodes of Arrested Development. And then that will become my favorite. And then I'll watch 3 or 4 episodes of Married with Children. And then that will become my favorite. So recency bias is big when it comes to TV. And you try to throw out disclaimers and say, my favorite show now, or my favorite show when I'm in this mood. You try to throw out different disclaimers so that you don't get stung with recency bias, but it happens. Man, let's see here. I have definitely been privy to saying that a concert that I just got done with was the best one I've ever been to. Most recently doesn't exist, because the last concert I went to was long before COVID. I want to say the last show, okay. My fiance and I just got done seeing a show, a string quartet, but that's not the same. That's more concerto or symphony versus a concert. Last concert I went to with her, it's been so long that I don't remember. It may have been Beck and Cage the Elephant. It may have been Weezer. They were all kind of right in the same pocket as each other. So I actually don't remember. But I know in my deep, deep concert going days, when I would be privy to going to 2 concerts a week, done it a few times, I know I would walk away from some of those shows and say, man, Two Door Cinema Club might be the best show I've ever seen. Or, wow, the Heim Sisters was the best show I've ever seen. They were so hungry. They were so on that night. Which they were, by the way. And then I'll haul off and say, my God, I just got done seeing Weird Al with a symphony, and that might be the best show I've ever seen. Which, by the way, it is one of the best shows I've ever seen. The show that Al Yankovic puts on, with costume changes and video boards and his knowledge of himself as he performs, it's really kind of a sight to behold. Dude knows how to put on a show, let alone make fun music and good music and intelligent music. And then, Lord knows, after I left the 21 Pilots concert, that's that one. And see, whenever I start falling into the trap of recency bias or become prisoner of the moment, that's when I usually pause and say, it's in my top 3. Because see, then you can commit while not committing and say, all right, so my top 3 concerts of all time, or my top 5 concerts, or my top 5 this, that, whatever. Because then you don't pinhole yourself into picking one thing and then have to go back, much like I did with Maui, and then be like, well, kinda. Seen a lot of good concerts, and I would struggle to tell you which one was the best. And I'm so happy and privileged to tell you that I have forgotten a lot of the concerts I have been to. I've probably forgotten more concerts than a lot of people have been to, which is really cool. Kind of a really fun part of my life that started in 2012, along with the birth of All of the Above Radio. And speaking of concerts, a favorite song, that's another one. I struggle so much because I have been into so many different types of music and genres of music, and phases of my life have caused me to be into different things. I have never been able to nail down my favorite songs. What I do know is that I would have to put away the top 5 or 10. It would have to be like the top 25, because there's too many genres that I like. And the trap that I fall into the most when it comes to songs and music is covers. Because here over here is the original song. Let's say we'll just use A Day in the Life as my example. A Day in the Life by the Beatles. I heard the news today. Oh boy. That song was made in, we'll just say, the 1960s. It's a phenomenal song. It's one of the best Beatles songs, to my opinion. But within the last year, I've heard two covers of it that I thought were absolutely phenomenal. One of them by, let's see if I can find it for you. One of which is by a bluegrass band whose name is currently escaping me, and Google is not helping me. But there is a bluegrass band that does a version of A Day in the Life that is amazing. And I wanted to be like, wow, I think that might be better than the Beatles. And then, I remember this like it happened a week ago. I was finishing up sweeping at the restaurant that I work at, and it's me and fellow bartender, now manager, also a big time music fan. I got on the Alice in Chains Pandora channel, and a live version of A Day in the Life is sung by Chris Cornell. And two different moments in the midst of me sweeping and us chatting, we both stopped in our tracks, looked at each other, looked at the speakers, looked at each other, and just said, this might be the best version of the song I've ever heard. Now, there are hardcore Beatles fans that are screaming recency bias right now. Now, I do challenge you to listen to the song and tell me what you think of it and tell me if you think it's good. But I will admit, maybe recency bias, maybe not. And like I was telling you earlier, if I were to compare the highlights of all of the trips I've taken with my fiance in totality, that gives you a better clue. If I were to sit and listen just back to back to back, the three different versions that I can think of A Day in the Life, maybe I could tell you, just from an opinion standpoint, which one is the best versus just falling prey to recency bias. And just to expand on the music point just real quick, like I was telling you, my life has kind of run in seasons. And so my closest friend in the world, the Emperor, better known as Age Diamante on Instagram, he actually texted me. He's like, hey, your top five musicians of all time. And I froze. Because I was like, so do I answer in totality? Do I answer more recently? Because my recent top five would be far different than my all-time top five. And you could genuinely ask me, okay, for every decade of your life, starting with like age 10, 10 to 20, 20 to 30, 30 to 40. Because each of them would be different. And I escaped recency bias by not putting AWOL Nation in my top five. They are phenomenal. I love that band. But if you stack their body of work up against the artists I did put in my top five, it doesn't compare. I tried to avoid recency bias. I tried. So let's just go ahead and read to you. I am scrolling as we speak. I am going to read to you what I said would be my top five as he asked me that day. And it's going to be in blue. And I'm going to look for it. And I'm going to find it. And it's right here. So, I just tried to go with my gut, not fall into recency bias, and just pull in total my top five musicians slash groups. If you cared, this is without recency bias. Ice Cube, Michael Jackson, Chris Cornell, no matter what he's in, Phil Collins, no matter what he's in, and Metallica. And if you gave me an hour to process that, or if you gave me a top 10 or a top 20 to process it, if you really put gun to head and said 2 hours, 25 slots, you don't have to fill them all, that would be so much better for me. But you know what? It's also kind of good to just tell me, hey, just figure it out right now. Just answer it. Don't think too much about it. Because then I won't battle with the recency bias or not or grand total. That's what happens when you like a lot of things, when you've been to a lot of good concerts or been to a bunch of cool places or taken a lot of fun vacations. You tend to overthink it and either fall into recency bias or try to avoid it. Which, by the way, that's how I loop back just real quick. So that story I was telling you about while my fiance was on the massage table and she said, hey, remember that ceviche we had in Maui? And that's when I said, I remember the poke more strongly. And I was like, I don't want to be prisoner of the moment, but I think that's the best poke I've ever had. And she said, I'll just go ahead and say it's the best poke I've ever had. And I took about a half a minute. I was like, yeah, it sure is. It really, really is. I have not had fish more fresh than from that food trailer. And the seaweed salad that they made really honestly tasted like it was from the water. It was unbelievable. I've never had anything like it, and it was so good. But see, I overthink myself and try not to be prisoner of the moment, because you at some point will have to go back and be like, oh no, that's not the best blah blah. This one from a year ago is. So once again, I open it up to you. allofthe.aboveradio@gmail.com or at Hank, how you doing? Or at Hank told you so on Instagram. Chat with me about the moments you have not fallen prey to recency bias or the moments that you have. I will accept either one. And by the way, another example of recency bias or being prisoner of the moment, and anybody who plays fantasy sports will fall prey to this one. You ever watch a really good performance on Sunday from some random third string wide receiver and think he was going to be the savior to your fantasy football team? It works, and that door swings both ways. More than once, I have fallen privy to prisoner of the moment and picked up a player who actually got me further into the playoffs. For example, Mike Sims Walker. For example, Stevie Johnson. For example, I think it was Mike Anderson, whomever the Denver Broncos running back was the year that some important running back got hurt, and then this guy took over on some next man up BS. You play recency bias every now and then, it pays off. But then there's sometimes you play recency bias and you absolutely, or you try not to play recency bias and it fails. Perfect example, I am a devout New York Giants fan. And it's 2011 and my fantasy football team is okay, but not great. And I thought Mario Manningham was going to be the savior. Now, was he a savior at Super Bowl 46? A little bit. But anybody who, like me, watched Victor Cruz score 3 touchdowns and think, it's not going to happen. No big deal. It's Mario Manningham. This is the guy. Mario Manningham was the second round draft pick. Victor Cruz was the undrafted free agent. Anyone who went recency bias or prisoner of the moment and took Victor Cruz, there's a reasonable chance you won your fantasy football league or at least got to the finals. For those like me who didn't, well, you're left to talk about it later like this. And regular sports in general, obviously, fall privy to recency bias slash prisoner of the moment. As a matter of fact, I actually took a screen cap of Bleacher Report from just a few short days ago. Is Giannis the best player in NBA? Two-time MVP. Five-time All-NBA. Defensive Player of the Year. Finals MVP. 26 years of age. Has Giannis dethroned the king? Vote and debate in the comments. And by the way, 22,500 people voted and there was 373 comments. And that was just within 4 minutes of them posting that survey. The Milwaukee Bucks just won the NBA title. Giannis Antetokounmpo put down a performance for the ages, closing out the Phoenix Suns with 50 frickin' points. And ladies and gentlemen, recency bias took over. Now, is there a possibility that Giannis is a better player now, in this moment in time, than LeBron James? If you want to debate that, you go right ahead. That's not why I'm here. I'm purely here to tell you that as soon as the best performance happened, somebody was going to try to compare him to the player that just got done being the best. Or they feel just got done being the best. Because you know what? If the Phoenix Suns won that title, somebody would have thrown out, is Chris Paul the best point guard of all time? Or is Devin Booker the future star of the NBA? Or is DeAndre Ayton the return of the big man? Somebody would have thrown out a recency bias slash prisoner of the moment to match the moment that just happened. It would have been inevitable. It just happened to be Giannis. And you know what? Maybe somebody would have said, is Giannis the best player to never win a title? Better than Charles Barkley? Debate now. It's amazing how quickly, I mean, it's obviously called prisoner of the moment and recency bias for a reason, but it's amazing just how quick it happens. I would be willing to guess that any of the sports talk radio or post game that happened immediately after the NBA Finals probably said, is Giannis the best player in the NBA? And I would be willing to guess, after the Tampa Bay Lightning just got done winning their second Stanley Cup in a row, some hockey writer probably had the audacity to fling recency bias and say, are they better than the Detroit Red Wings of the 90s? Or are they better than the Montreal Canadiens of the early 90s? Is Andre Vasilevsky better than Patrick Waugh? Which, by the way, neither one is better than Marty Brodeur. But once again, that's not why I'm here. And so now, there's one or two more bits of recency bias I want to fling at you. And this one's a funny one, and I've actually heard more than one person say this. Actually, I heard this heard somebody say this as recently as two days ago? No, yesterday. Yesterday, time of live recording, somebody said this. Two ladies are sitting at my bar. I'm making drinks, and they're just chatting back and forth. One's getting married in November. The other getting married in December. The one getting married in December says, I work with a lot of people, I see a lot of people from day to day, and I've had so many really good conversations with somebody, and my immediate thought was, man, I'd really love for them to be at my wedding. That has happened to me. And somewhere my fiance is shouting, "No, we can't fit them! No!" But once or twice over the last 2 or 3 months, I've had a coworker that I just get done talking to and think, man, that'd be a really nice person to have at my wedding. Our wedding. Asterisk. COVID was relaxed for a while, and with the Delta variant, things are becoming a little more nebulous, but we'll just say, as COVID has loosened for now, I have seen more bar guests and regulars that I once knew on a much more frequent basis have started to come back. And I've been having conversations with them to say, oh, I totally forgot about them. Why didn't I invite them to the wedding? And when you get down to the whole idea of wedding planning and inviting, you really got to process the people you genuinely want there. And if they are first on your mind, they need to be invited. If they're third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh on your mind, or if recency bias takes over, there's a reasonable chance they don't need to be invited. things you learn. You can invite people to a birthday party. Ah, no big deal. A come and go party. We're going to be out at a bar. We got space to fit 40 people. You tell people different times to show up. Recency bias, go nuts.
A wedding is considerably different. And this is another funny one that I think about, being prisoner of the moment / recency bias. Once again, I'm using them interchangeable. They are a couple of degrees away from each other, but at the same time, for the sake of this conversation, I'm using them both because one of them is going to resonate with you better than the other, and I just want you to be dialed in.
But another example of me being prisoner of the moment is how well I can sometimes tip. And a lot of factors are in play. How good was the server? How good was the experience? How good was the food? How much did I drink? Am I on vacation? Any of these things can shape the creation of the moment. And there has been a time or two where I have been prisoner of the moment and tipped, we'll just call it 35 to 40%. And then there's been times where I normally have a number or a percentage in my head of what I'm gonna tip. And sometimes I'll tip more, and sometimes I'll tip the exact amount and walk away and say, I probably could have tipped a little bit more. Or, I probably should have tipped less. Yeah, the amount I tip, that one is definitely, or can definitely be related to prisoner of the moment or recency bias. And of course, the meal itself or the experience itself can be tied into recency bias. For example, for years and years, I have told anybody that will listen that the best cocktail I have ever had was the Old Fashioned at Sage at the Aria Hotel and Casino. And I wasn't much of an Old Fashioned drinker at the time, so I have no idea if it was just the fact that I was in Vegas or just the fact that it was the first truly good one I had. I'm not really sure what it was, but I know and there was some part of me that would love to go back to Sage at the Aria Hotel and Casino and have that same Old Fashioned to see if it's actually just a good drink or if it was just recency bias. And I've actually said, and I've said over and over again, that that's the best cocktail I've ever had. And as I'm sitting here talking to you, it's not true. Because I can tell you the best cocktail I have ever had, and it's not even close. And I'm going to pull this up because I want to read the description to you. Let's go into the library. Here we go. This is it. Where is it? So, ladies and gentlemen, the best cocktail I have ever had, it's not even close, and there is no debate whatsoever about this. And I could play recency bias because of just how phenomenal the trip was, but ladies and gentlemen, the drink was just that good. It is the Burdeos Sazerac. Ladies and gentlemen, if you didn't know, I was privileged enough to be sent by my job to Atotonilco, El Alto, and Jalisco de Mexico. I was in Jalisco, Mexico, at the Patron Ranch to do a barrel selection. I was sent there along with a couple of other local Dallas and Houston and San Antonio bartenders to be schmoozed by Patron into buying one of their barrels and having a barrel select. If you've ever been to a bar or restaurant that they tout that they have a barrel selection, somebody associated with that company sat down and tasted anywhere between 4 and 20 different flavors of the same liquor. And it was unbelievably detailed, the barrel selection process. They sit you down and they've got this booklet that says, okay, you are trying barrel 41B. And here you are trying barrel 41C. And here you are trying barrel 47F. And here you are trying barrel 48I. And it's basically different barrels have the same distillate in them, but they were stored at a different temperature or in a different building or at a different height. And for those of you who are not super deep into this whole liquor game, every single one of those things makes a difference in how your liquor tastes. If you were to sip from a bottle of Elijah Craig that's on the ninth row of Rick House B versus the fourth row of Rick House A, it makes a difference between temperature and climate and elevation and evaporation. It all makes a difference. So I was privileged enough to take that trip. And while I was on that trip, any beverage in the building was available to you in the So on the right, when you drive into the Patron Ranch, to the right is the actual distillery, the factory, whatever you want to call it. And then behind it is the garden where they make the food for the hotel. So La Casona is the hotel on the left. You drive in, you turn to the right to go to the distillery. You go to the left to turn to go to the hotel. And the hotel has a gigantic bar. Any Patron that is currently in production, that is currently in bottles, it's available to you. And I gotta tell you, now that I am a drinker of tequila thanks to that trip, and now that I'm a appreciator of cocktails in large part thanks to that trip, I wish I tried more of these as I'm looking at the menu that they had available. But let me just go ahead and tell you one more time. The Burdeos Sazerac is the best cocktail I've ever had. And probably in large part because they use a 2-year aged tequila that is finished off in a Bordeaux barrel. And the tequila, by the way, if you just decide you want to buy a bottle of it, costs you about $400. To make a Sazerac out of that with the classic sugar cube and bitters, I can't even describe it. But I know I drank several of them 2 nights in a row. And the only reason I didn't continue to drink them is because I could feel my stomach starting to make that left turn into Pukesville. And I had that really tough moment in my head of, I feel absolutely nice right now. I know if I drink one more, I will savor every second of it, and then my stomach will tell me, you're not going to be able to sleep well. And the happiest moment, or one, okay, recency bias. One of the happiest moments of that trip is when they, because is they sent you away with lots of favors and fun little gifts, little cocktail shaker and a plaque and picture, so on and so on and so on. But they actually sent you away with a monogrammed, engraved bottle of Grand Patron Burdeos for you to keep with your name on it. I will take a picture of it and I will post it. It was so cool. And by the way, this is how you could tell the difference in the people that truly appreciated the trip and understood the value of the trip versus the hard alcoholics. There was two people on the back of the bus with, because the drive from the Patron Ranch to Jalisco Airport was an hour and change. You're driving from the middle of nowhere through the crappiest part of Jalisco, Mexico, back to the airport. And there was a couple of people that were nursing a hangover. And within 5 minutes of the bus rolling, they opened up their bottles of Grand Patron Burdeos and killed their hangover with it. I wanted to freaking scream. And while I understand it's theirs to do with whatever they wish, some part of me really wished that they understood and appreciated the gift that they had just been given. I was just kind of disappointed. Really, I was just kind of disappointed. I still have mine. And of course, you could kind of play that game of, like that episode of Modern Family where they're holding onto that specialty bottle of wine, and it's kind of the, well, what are you saving it for? What's the occasion? And once it gets to that occasion, will you then get cold feet and say, well, I need a bigger occasion? So as of this moment, that bottle of Burdeos that is monogrammed to me is quite possibly earmarked for either my bachelor party or my wedding day. We will see. Or maybe I'll just skip a couple of chapters and buy the full bottle. Every time I walk into a liquor store and see a bottle of Grand Patron Burdeos, I just look at it and say, someday. And it's not like I'm looking at a bottle of Louis the 14th cognac that's a couple of grand, or a bottle of Dalmore 25-year scotch. I don't know if that exists. Don't quote me on that. It's an attainable bottle of liquor. It's a ridiculous amount of money to spend, but it's an attainable bottle of liquor. And just to follow up, where I started with this was the greatest meal or experience of all time. And I do, in totality, say that one of the best experiences I have ever had was my buddy's bachelor party in Houston at Vic and Anthony's, just across the street from Minute Maid Park, or Enron Field, depending on how long you've been a fan. And in total, that's one of the best dining experiences I have ever had. The company I kept, the music in the background, the intelligence of the sommelier. And what's funny is, it's not the best piece of steak I've ever had, but it's possibly the best dining experience I've ever had. And I will not let recency bias get in the way when I talk about that cut of steak, because the cut of steak was good, but the experience made it better. I take pride in the fact that I'm able to, overthink, but I'm able to kind of peel back the curtain of recency bias not be prisoner of the moment and know when things were truly good and why they were good. Doesn't mean it always happens, as we're sitting here talking about examples. And I want to share this one with you. Years and years and years ago, I'm a student at Eastern Michigan, and I'm hanging out with my, I don't know that I would ever call him a friend. He was somebody who, well, not the point. I'm hanging out with a guy, and I'm with his fraternity buddies, and we're playing video games and listening to Tupac. Bear in mind, it's the year 2000, ladies and gentlemen. And, of course, we're listening to the All Eyes on Me album because that's what frat boys listen to in the year 2000. Go ahead. Nod your head. It's okay. You were in a fraternity in 2000. And you're white. It's okay. Nod your head. It's okay. You were listening to All Eyes on Me. It's okay. And somebody, as he's playing Nintendo 64, hauls off and says, "You know what, guys? I think Tupac's the greatest rapper of all time." And I got a coworker who we were listening to Drake one night as we were cleaning, and he was like, "Man, I think Drake's the best lyricist of all time." Now, I could have just as easily included this with my music talk, but it was in a different spot in my notes, and I just wanted to make sure I got to it. And what's funny is I actually don't have a huge rebuttal when somebody talks about the greatest lyricist or rapper of all time, because like you could sit here and really... I'm sure there is some like linguistics professor or English teacher or Nobel Prize award winner that will tell you who the best lyricist is in terms of grammatical form or cadence or writing style. I'm sure there is somebody who can quantify that. But most anybody, whether they fancy themselves as a freestyle rapper, a SoundCloud rapper, or just a fan of hip-hop music, it's pretty much opinion. So if you want to have that opinion, you go right ahead. But there's a chance that if you're listening to the song and then you say that they're the best, that's recency bias. That's being prisoner of the moment. I just had to get that one in. I just had to poke a needle in the side of the guy I don't know his name then and don't remember who the hell he is now. But anybody that hauls off and says that Tupac is the best rapper of all time, really that's really more what I'm poking at. He was great. Super influential. And influential to Kendrick Lamar, who is widely known as one of the better now. Would I ever put him in a class as the best rapper of all time? Nope. Do I own several of his albums and enjoy them still to this day? As recently as like 2 months ago, when I just decided to haul off and listen to a bunch of West Coast rap from the mid to late 90s and early aughts? Yep. But not for my ears is he the best, or anywhere near it. And this one... This is actually, I didn't want to call anybody prisoner of the moment, but in the back of my head, just because I won't let myself believe this for several reasons, I want to call her out for being prisoner of the moment. And here's what I'm talking about. So I have a coworker. She's only been there, she's been there maybe 2 months. And maybe like 3 weeks into her working there, she's worked at a couple of different places. She's very experienced. I think she said she's been in the business maybe 7 or 8 years. And one night after work, me and her and two other people were sitting and drinking, just kind of chatting about life and work and all those things. And she hauls off and says to me, "Hank, you are by far the most efficient bartender I have ever worked with." So one of the reasons why I want to shout recency bias at her is because she's only worked with me for at that point 3 weeks.
And two, I hate when people set a high bar for me.
Because then it gets in my head that you think I'm the most efficient bartender you've ever worked with, and suddenly if your ticket is there and there's three tickets that were before you, suddenly I'm just like, ah, crap, do I need to make theirs first to keep up my reputation in their head? Or far be it for somebody to hand me a compliment and mean it and not have recency bias. While I understand my own issues are kind of folded into that one, I needed to bring it up because I thought it was kind of entertaining that I could throw the possibility of her having recency bias. Like, she was in the midst of a busy shift and she just feels like I was a huge helper to her that night and everything ran smoothly in part because of me. That's great. I am happy to be a part of that. But don't jinx me by calling me the most efficient bartender you've ever worked with. I'm going to shout recency bias and defend myself and try to set the bar back down low for in case I have a bad day or in case I'm not nearly as good as you thought I was. Now, maybe I am that good and maybe I'm not giving myself enough credit. But once again, kind of not the point of the story. Here we are just talking about recency bias. Or prisoner of the moment. And by the way, the reason why I opened the show to say at the end, I'm going to tell you that this is the best episode about recency bias I've ever done. Oh, well, because last week I did a different episode about recency bias and prisoner of the moment. So true story, I'm going to pull back the curtain. More frequently than not, in this version of the podcast, now that it is all new, all different, all of the above, I tend to record the body, and then I'll come and do the beginning and the end later. When I was doing all of the above radio, 45 to 50 shows a year, I was in shape. I was in shape to sit down. Microphone pops on and I talk straight ahead. I'm not necessarily in that shape. What I am now is a person who will give you a rant and then take a day or two to kind of process how to open it and close it and then come back and do it later, which is fun. I very much enjoy doing it because it provides me the ability to clean up some things I may have said in the midst of. So last week, at time of talking to you, I did a different version of this very show, complete with the definitions and talking about Chris Rock. A lot of it is the same, but I actually gave different examples of recency bias or being prisoner of the moment. And I walked away a day later, I was like, I don't know if I really like those. I don't think those are really good examples. I want to go back into the lab and make up some better examples or some more clean, succinct examples. And one of the big things I talked about was the NBA Finals. They weren't done yet. So my thought bubble about the NBA Finals and prisoner of the moment would have ended up being outdated. So I was going to have to come on and record a cleanup anyway, and I thought, you know what? Let me just do a whole show. Let's just re-record the whole thing and give them something fresh, clean, and 100% up to date. Which is why I jokingly say to you that this is the best episode about recency bias I have ever done. Because if nothing else, it's better than the other one I did a week before. So let's go back and open it up. allofthe above radio@gmail.com. THEHRT3@gmail.com. @HankToldYouSo or @HankHowYouDoing on Instagram. I am glad to have hold your conversations about anything we just talked about. How has recency bias affected you, or how have you been able to outthink recency bias? Whichever one works for you. And any of the stuff I brought up. best musician, best meal, best cocktail, how much do you tip on recency bias, any of the topics, they are all fair game. Let's get a big old fat discussion started. We will do this again soon. And soon after that, and soon after that, and soon after that. And I would love to hear your comments in between this show and the next one, whenever that may be. My name is Hank. Hey, how you doing? This has been all new, all different, all of the above. May there be a next time. I say till next time.